What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valenti and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for tonight's game and Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
We are on the road to Canton because of one Andre Johnson. We're in this position. I think the Texans, a lot of their relevancy, you can attribute to, I would say, first and foremost, Andre Johnson. And then J.J. Watt comes in after that.
Yeah.
But it starts with Andre Johnson. And then tonight, going forward, I feel like this whole weekend is going to be, as I've said before, a coronation and an acknowledgement of the greatness of one Andre Johnson. Of course, you got the whole Hall of Fame class. All of them deserve their recognition.
Mm-hmm.
But Andre Johnson, most specifically, we are here because of dude. So let's relive some of these moments, Lopez. You got a few moments like the top. I found this interesting. You pointed this out, and I agree with you.
Yeah.
The thing we talk about the most, probably, and that's, I think it's because everybody likes a good fight.
Yeah.
Or
a
good beatdown.
Yeah.
Fisticuffs. We all do. I think it transcends demographics,
mm-hmm.
age, race, whatever. Everybody like a good fight.
Yeah.
So the fact that Andre Johnson kicked Courtland Finnegan's ass going on 15 years ago now.
God, it's been 15 years.
Almost. I think 14. That was 2010, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, my Lord.
So we are approaching 15 years pretty soon. That is like the lasting image or like this big moment. People are going to talk about that until the end of time. But I like that you point this out, Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
That ain't even a top. You could argue top 10.
It wouldn't be in my top 10.
Andre Johnson moment.
No, it wouldn't even be in my top 10. And not to say that I wasn't intrigued. I didn't write about it. You know, I was covering that game and writing a column that it's not, you know, somewhat of, I guess, like a logo, so to speak, of Andre Johnson's career. I get all that. He's probably signed it a million times more than any other picture that he signed.
It's got to be a badass picture, though.
Oh, you know, it's a bad. Well, we've seen it.
Yeah, we've seen it.
But, you know, he's probably signed that more.
I mean, even just the feeling of signing it.
Look
at me work this dude.
I get it all. And I understand that a lot of people in your mind's eye, when you think of Andre Johnson, you think of that. I kind of hate it, though. I get it. I appreciated it. I thought it was badass. But I kind of hate it.
Because you think it overplays, overshadows his greatness a little bit?
Well, yes, but to me, that's not Andre Johnson. That's not what he ever wanted to be. He came into town and wanted to be professional, just do your stand on that business, as people like to say, low key, don't say a lot, but when you do, make it meaningful.
That was the part of it that was Andre Johnson.
He didn't make it meaningful.
Hey, look, ain't gonna see me out here fighting a lot.
Yeah, but he was.
But when I get mine, it's gonna be upside Courtland Finnegan's head.
But that's not what he wanted to be. Like if you gave him truth serum, I'm not gonna say he regrets that because in the moment he felt like it was right. But I think he's a little bit embarrassed that that's what people are focusing on, have always focused on. That's not even a top 10 for me. You want to know the top three moments? You want to know the biggest three moments that Andre Johnson, to me, is going to be in the Hall of Fame?
We can start with the third,
with
number three, which actually comes after that beatdown,
mm-hmm.
which I think is worth noting. Like, he did great things, amazing, incredible things, even after that. I think some people who may not remember might think that, he was at the end of his career, mm-hmm. and he was
No.
He continued to be great. So let's start with this.
So let me set it up. It was overtime. Andre Johnson was in the midst. This is like, think about these numbers. He was in the midst of a 14 catch, 273 yard game.
Yeah. This is in 2012, by the way.
And it's overtime against the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Texans, a field goal or a score of any time wins it.
Double screen to Johnson. Andre Johnson! Here
Johnson, a part of this team for his entire career, has stuck around through thick and thin when the chips were down in the fourth quarter. In overtime, when the game has been on the line, time and again, they have looked for him.
48 yards on the game-winning touchdown pass from Schaub to Johnson. Andre Johnson, 14 catches for a career-high 273 yards.
There are two moments that I ranked higher than that. But in terms of a game, that was his masterpiece. That was his, all my classical music and opera fans, that was his magnum opus. That was the opus moment. That was like Andre Johnson at his peak, at his very, very best, performing like he never had before.
When you read off the numbers, you know what it made me think about?
Dude, 14 and 273.
It made me think about a couple of years later when it gets awkward and he leaves and there's that Bill O'Brien sort of conflict that we've got there. And you remember the whole 40 catches thing?
Yeah.
Like he would only get 40 catches or something like that. Like, brother, there was some supposedly some conversation between Andre Johnson and Bill O'Brien about, hey, you know, you stick around, you ain't going to get more than 40 catches or whatever it is. And Andre's retort being, I remember this very vividly. It's before I'm in the media at that point, or at least in sports media. I'm just a Texans fan, kind of paying attention. And Andre's like, who going to catch more balls than me? Like, at that, like, who is on this team that's better than me? Now, at that point, DeAndre Hopkins is emerging. But, like, that's the only other guy on the team in Andre's mind, and I can certainly understand why, who he's like, okay, who else are you talking about? So, like, I think about that, how he, this guy is going to the Hall of Fame. At that point, is a future Hall of Famer already.
Yeah, we knew.
And just a couple of years earlier had a 14-catch, 270-something-yard game.
Come on, man.
Like, you going to tell me I ain't going to catch but 40 balls for this pitiful ass? And don't forget, we're talking about, like, the 2015 era Texans. Like, we're not talking about it, and we love you, Cecil Shorts, but we're not talking about like a wide receiving group of like world beaters outside of DeAndre Hopkins and one Andre Johnson. That I remember being shocked by that at the time. Definitely could understand Andre Johnson feeling a certain way.
All right, that's the third Hall of Fame moment for me. The second on the list, number two. And you have to realize, like, it's that old. This is when the Texans were in the thick of things. Andre Johnson had lifted this team, along with, you know, a good defense and some other great players, into contention. And they're in Washington against the then Redskins, and they were losing. Seconds left in the game, and this happened.
Play clock is down to one. Here comes the rush. Schaub steps up. Schaub throwing on the move up in the air. It's caught by Johnson. Touchdown, Houston. What a play. A jump ball. Andre Johnson wins one-on-one matchups every time.
Was there any doubt in anybody's mind he was going to catch it? He had Doughty, and he was measuring this ball. There's no doubt in my mind that Schaub was going to go to him. You go to your best player. You let him make a great play. Andre Johnson's done this so many times for the Texans. Out jumps Reed Doughty for a huge touchdown.
Matt Schaub keeping the play alive, stepping up in the pocket and finding his go-to guy, Andre Johnson.
All right, so Matt Schaub had no doubt he was going to Andre Johnson either. You know, that was the thing. Like, if you recall the play, he actually threw it across the field, like from the right side to the left side.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't thinking about anybody but Andre. And Andre was, they were draped on him. It was two dudes, and everything that got him drafted, everything that made him Andre Johnson, speed, strength, hands, and guts, will, whatever, was on one play.
So Randy Moss used to use the term or the phrase, chuck it up there, dog. Just chuck it up there, dog.
Yeah, yeah.
So that phrase is associated with Randy Moss. But Andre Johnson would be in the chuck it up there, dog demographic, right? Yeah. Like he would be chuck it up there, dog family member.
Yeah.
Because he was that type. I mean, and I'm interested in this, how this plays out with his speech and with all the Texans being there.
Mm-hmm.
A good piece of the narrative with Andre Johnson and the selling point, I'm pretty sure John McClain did a good job of this with the committee whenever it was time, or all the different times that it was time for him to present Andre Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't play with quarterbacks.
That's the thing.
He didn't have great quarterbacks, which is true. We all know that. We watched his career.
Matt Schaub might have something to say about that.
Matt Schaub makes a play there, yeah. and it's kind of both things. It's like, now, of course, we know that Matt Schaub is not.
I mean, he wasn't great.
Not great.
But he wasn't a chump.
But that was a pretty good play by Matt Schaub,
yeah.
But also the play by Johnson shows you why it only mattered but so much who his quarterback was.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you can just get the ball in his vicinity, he's got the best chance to come down with it. But on this Schaub point, I am curious on how this, like, what does this look like when we start having this conversation, or when Andre Johnson starts talking about his career? Because so much of it is tied to him not having a great quarterback. And that, to me, is a direct shot at Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
Because, again, while we know he wasn't a great quarterback, he was his quarterback for the longest time, did his most damage probably with Matt Schaub, or not probably, did his most damage with Matt Schaub.
Yeah.
And Matt Schaub was not a scrub until 2013.
No, he was not. He was good.
And then after that, had a credible backup career for years and years after that, mm-hmm. like after we just assumed he was cooked. So I do wonder how Schaub internalizes all of that, even though this is going to be 100%. About Andre Johnson.
All right. And number one, without question for me, and I remember this so vividly, like it was yesterday. I forget a lot of stuff here and there, but I remember this like it was yesterday, because we watched this game and I was doing the morning show. And so the next morning, bright and early, I remember saying, when Matt Schaub gets inducted into the Hall of Fame, this is the play that people are going to be
playing. Andre Johnson.
I mean, when Andre Johnson gets into the Hall of Fame, this is the play that everyone is going to be playing on repeat. And frankly, I think it will be and is as he's getting inducted. Flat out bullied three big dudes on the Cardinals defense for a big time touchdown.
First down for Houston inside the 20. Schaub to throw it. Pressure coming. Schaub unloads and complete to Johnson. Andre Johnson. Touchdown. Oh, what an individual effort by the Pro Bowler.
And that was an unbelievable catch by Andre Johnson. And I'll tell you why. Right as he's going to catch it, he knows he's going to get knocked out. He knows that he's going to take a head-on-head collision. Watch this. As he comes across the field, right there, he knows he's going to get whacked. He's going to get whacked by Gerald Hayes. He does a nice job hanging on to the football, and he continues to find a way to get to score a touchdown. Great concentration by Andre Johnson.
So he caught that ball just inside the 5-yard line.
Yes.
Gerald Hayes is not a small dude.
No.
He went heels up. He went heels up when Andre Johnson lowered his shoulder.
He probably should have tried to wrap up. He probably should have tried to wrap. I don't know who he thought that was that he was about to hit, but that was damn Andre Johnson.
Then
wrap up, dog.
So Hayes goes heels up. Then he gets hammered by the safety at the 3-yard line, bullies his ass to the turf.
Yeah.
Then he gets hit at the 1-yard line.
Hammered is a relative term, because it did not look like Andre Johnson felt like he was getting hammered.
Then he gets hit at the 1-yard line with his back to the goal line and just backpedals, bullies that dude into the end.
That poor guy. He was the one I felt the most sorry for, because he, I thought, gave the best effort in trying to bring down Andre Johnson.
And he was wrapped up.
Yes. He just clearly had no chance.
Nothing.
No chance. I mean, if I was his coach, I'd be like, hey, man, you tried. Go get him next time. But old buddy just ran you over, ran straight through your chest, ran straight through your face.
Dude.
Man.
That was. I said it the next morning. I said, that's going to be his Hall of Fame highlight.
I think it is. I call it the pinball play.
Because it's
like he just pinballs off these like NFL players. What the call says, he's going to get whacked.
Yeah.
Man, most receivers would have been whacked.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're Andre Johnson and maybe just a few others, but Andre Johnson specifically felt like he was doing the whacking.
Yes, he was.
That makes sense.
It's just so funny how he just bounced off of him, man.
Bounced off of him.
It was like, B. Scott and I were talking about this, Chris, before the show. It's like when you go to like a double A or a 3A high school football game, and there's freaking Eric Dickerson.
Yep.
Like you know, it's like who are all these little kids trying to tackle that grown ass man?
Yeah.
You know,
it's like Sealy is a small town. All right, and somehow we got like an anomaly here.
Yes.
One of these things is not like the other, or like whenever you see Derrick Henry highlights from high school,
mm-hmm.
and you're like,
that's
well, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Wait a second here. And you know what's funny, too?
Why is he playing with children?
Andre, I don't think I realized this until I actually started covering the Texans and being around Andre a bunch. He's obviously not a small dude.
Oh, no.
But the way he played, you would have thought he was like 6'5", 240 or something like that. Like, Andre's like roughly 6'2".
He's 6'3". He came in. The only reason I know this is I was looking at his combine stuff. I was in a deep, dark rabbit hole today. His combine was 6'3", 232, and ran a 4.38.
Man, listen. If Andre Johnson is 6'3", I'm 6'3". He is not 6'3", man. Like, you can go – he's about 6'2".
Yeah.
He is not as imposing of a figure. Obviously, he doesn't play anymore.
Yeah.
But, dude, he just – it's like he turned into pop – like, I know he wasn't skinny or anything. It's like he turned into something different.
Yeah.
Completely when he was on that field, man. And he looked and played so much bigger than he actually was. This play, like the one that you just mentioned here against Arizona.
Yeah.
If that is not the consensus number one play for Andre Johnson, just in terms of physical feet. Now, he's got a couple. When there's that one, I'm trying to remember that year against Washington. He's got a pretty cool catch. Like, he's got a lot more moments than this. But this was just like.
I had one against the Titans.
The Titans, yeah.
Yeah, that was, yeah.
You already mentioned that game against the Jags where he goes for 270-some yards. But this is it. Like, a particular moment where it's just like bully ball, imposing your will, we gotta have it. That, like, I cannot get enough of that highlight. Hopefully they show it as much as they can in Canton.
I hope so. But you know, just make no mistake about it, this is the reason we're all here today, doing the pregame show to the pregame show, adjusting our schedule, sending people to Canton. Thousands upon thousands of Texans fans in Canton or Cleveland as we speak. John Harris tweeting a picture of the blank space where his bust is gonna rest. The fact that the Texans are relevant is because of Andre Johnson. The fact that the Texans are playing in this game is because of Andre Johnson. The fact that the Texans won their first ever division title in their playoff game is because of Andre Johnson. Like, he is the pioneer, so to speak, of what the Texans are.
I'll speak for myself here, man.
Mm-hmm.
We all know the Texans won that first game. Seth Payne had a big role in it against the Cowboys and everything. Personally, okay, I'm a teenager at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, cool, go Texans. That's great. But after that.
The next year.
It took a while for me to really buy into this thing.
Yeah.
I wasn't really big on the name at the time.
Yeah.
And it just didn't vibe. I was glad to have football back in the city, but I just wasn't vibing with it right.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite vibing with it until we got that bona fide superstar, Andre Johnson, something that we could actually be proud of. And yeah, no, everything that you just said and more, and especially for me, as somebody that needed, I'm being honest about it, I needed a little bit convincing. Andre Johnson did the convincing.
Yeah, he did.
To bring me over to the Texan side. He's John Lopez. I'm Brandon Scott. Chris Santiago is holding things down for us behind the glass. And coming up next here on In the Loop, would you play them? That's next on In the Loop.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch. From the best bets to the sneaky underdogs, and of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for tonight's game and Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
Hall of Fame game tonight, Texans and Bears. And so I got a question. I'm going to give you a name, you give me an answer, and we'll discuss it. Would you play him? That's the question. Would you play him? I give you a name. Your answer, we discuss. First name here. As we don't expect the majority of the starters to play in this game. None of them for the Bears. Most of them for the Texans. Would you play him? Jalen Petrie. Where are y'all at on this? Santiago, I want you on this too. Lopez, Santiago, would y'all play Jalen Petrie? 713-572-4610 is how you get in. Also, interact on the YouTube and Twitch chats. I want to hear from all of y'all.
Yeah.
Would you play Jalen Petrie tonight?
100%. Not even blink. He's got a new position. I mean, I know he's played there before. He's been in there in some situations and stuff. Dude's not a safety anymore. He's a nickel. And he's running with the first team, but I don't think anybody in this room is going to say, oh, he's definitely the best nickel out there.
No.
Not yet.
So, yeah, man. I don't.
In a heartbeat.
Santiago, I'm curious of your answer to
this. I'd be like Adam Splaine,
100%.
100%. 100%. 100%. And like Lopez said, he has a new position. I want to see how he looks at that nickel position with the Texans. Like, I want to see. Even if it's for just a drive. Even if it's just for one drive, one series, whatever. Like, that's fine. That's all. Just once.
So, y'all know, I'm not shy about being a biased fan in favor of Jalen Petrie. Always tell you guys this. But I don't see how there's any other answer here.
Yeah, I know.
Like, I know y'all said 100%, and I hate when people are like, 150%. It's like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
But, like, that. You know what I mean? Like, seriously. Like, it is that far. And I'll even go further with this.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all both justified this with the new position thing.
Yeah.
I'd want to see my man even at his old position.
Sure.
Because you remember how that was going? The reason why he's not at that position
anymore?
I mean,
he won't be, yeah.
Right. But you see what I'm saying, though?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't give a damn what position they playing him
even
at.
If he was, yeah.
If that's somebody that they want to be a significant part of their team, starter, rotational player, you know, whatever role, I feel like he needs to be out there.
Yeah.
Safety, slot corner, hybrid linebacker,
yeah.
Dime package line. What, I don't give a damn what position the man is playing. I feel like he needs to be out there, and I love him to death. But I want to see him play tonight. I absolutely want to see Jalen Petrie play tonight, wherever they put him.
We've seen it a million times. He can get to the ball. He doesn't always finish. He doesn't always make the tackle. He can get to, he can make some plays and be in position, and then sometimes he gets smoked. Well, let's see what you can do now in a new spot.
It's kind of an enigma, really, because you're trying to figure out, or at least I'm trying to figure out, what's wrong with him? Because he does seem to have, like,
To the ball.
Well, at the same time, like kind of how you just mentioned.
Yeah.
He's got a nose for the ball, a knack for the ball, but also seems to be lacking it at the same time at times.
Yeah.
It's a very, very curious thing. Very much a boom or bust type of player right now.
Yeah.
Can make plays for you and can also give them up.
And at that position, it's even more of a premium. You know, he'll be blitzing some more. He'll be up on the line of scrimmage some more. He'll be covering slot guys some more. Boy, you better finish. You know, you got to finish.
I tell you this, Lopez. I hope D'Amico's got some dust for my boy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Pixie dust.
I hope he's got some of that D'Amico pixie dust to sprinkle on my boy.
Yeah.
Because there's a football player in there somewhere.
There is.
I'm not trashing my dude.
That's what's most frustrating about
it. Yeah, I'm not trashing my dude at all. I was excited about him coming, even though he missed all those tackles in his in his rookie season and inexplicably led the team in tackles because they were just such a terrible team.
Yeah.
I was excited for him going into last year in year one of D'Amico, so that was a letdown that it didn't exactly pan out the way that we wanted it to. But there's no question to me. I put his name on here just because I don't know where he fits in the hierarchy or in the pecking order.
Well, I mean, technically, if he's a starter, he won't play, but he should.
Well, that's what I'm – that's my point.
Yeah.
I don't know if he is.
Like, I don't think they know.
He's on the depth chart listed as the starting safety.
Yeah.
I don't think we believe that.
Yeah.
The eye test from watching practice – indicates he could become the starting slot guy, but I don't really necessarily believe that. So what is he?
Yeah.
What's he doing?
Yeah.
Let me give you another name. Juice Scruggs. We are both high on Juice Scruggs, and he is obviously and clearly a starter, but hasn't played much center in the NFL, if at all, to my recollection.
Mm-hmm.
Should Juice Scruggs play tonight?
0% chance for me. It is such an important position. You're right. He hadn't played a whole lot of center, but boy, you know, he came in some weird, very challenging circumstances. As a young player, the starter Questenberry got hurt. He gets thrown in there. Others are vying for the position, and frankly, did well. He's your starting center. Don't mess around. He's got experience. He's been in NFL environments. I would say, yeah, just put that ball cap on.
What about you, Santiago?
That's CJ Stroud Center. I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah.
No need to see him.
That's a good point. It's not just like it's the familiarity, you know, and all that stuff. It's not just, hey, maybe see a few more reps. No, let's just protect everything there has to do with the CJ Stroud.
So I'm with everything y'all just said. I'll add this, though.
Mm-hmm.
When did Juice Scruggs get hurt last year?
Was that a preseason?
Was it not that last preseason game against the Saints? I was going through a lot at the time, if y'all remember.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's how that went down.
Yeah.
I feel like preseason is the whole reason why they lost Juice Scruggs in the beginning of the year to begin with.
Yeah.
I don't want to repeat that. Like, mm-hmm. I do think that there could be some value in him playing,
mm-hmm.
and so I would understand that, but I absolutely would not do it. I'm right there with y'all. I'm good. I feel comfortable with Juice Scruggs at center, feel comfortable where he's
at. Final preseason game against the Saints.
Yeah. That's how it went down.
Yeah.
So, like, hey, if CJ – to Santiago's point, if Stroud's out there, okay, you can have him out there. If he ain't, I don't need him.
Yeah.
I'm good. I'm good. Like, again, understand why you might do it because he hasn't had as much experience there as you would have liked to him have had, given that you drafted him in the second round to be your center and he ended up having to play guard last year and was hurt and all of that. But, no, nah, I'm good on no Juice Scruggs. So far, we want to see Jalen Petrie.
Yes.
But we're good with Juice Scruggs putting on that ball cap, as he is what Santiago said,
CJ Stroud center.
I'm with you. I'm with you. Throw another name out there. We discussed this earlier in the show. Mm-hmm. Let's bring it back. Kenyon Green.
I'm telling you, man. I wouldn't be surprised to see him. I would not be surprised to see him. So much on the line. So far to go. Because he has been injured. He's been out of shape. He's been questioned in terms of just how much he loves this game. He's come back doing the job, looking better. Has been, you know, anointed as the starter at left guard, which would tell you maybe don't play him. I would play him. I would play him. At least a series or two. Let's see what you got. It's just everything's a test for him right now. Like, there are established starters on the offensive line, but Kenyon Green is not one of them. Like, locks. He's not a lock. He is. He's there right now, but he's not a lock.
See, I think those are two different things, what you just said, though.
Yeah.
A lock and an established starter. Not to split hairs with you, but I will. He is a lock, but it's more so, it's not necessarily just as much about him as it is about everything else in that room. Mm-hmm. I was talking about this on the drive yesterday with Clinton Run.
Mm-hmm.
I think he is a lock, but I agree with you that he's not.
You think he's a lock that he's going to be a starting left guard?
Yeah, man.
I think he's got a lot to prove.
We've been out there. I agree with that, but I think those are two different things. We've been out there, Lopez.
No.
Who you got? Who you got over?
No, they're running him out with the first
just
team.
Just say it like he's.
But they've also started Kendrick Green.
Look, if Kendrick Green was taking this job, I feel like we would have heard that by now. The same way that Kamari Lassiter is taking his.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like if Kendrick Green was noticeably and demonstrably better than Kenyon Green,
mm-hmm.
I don't think they would have been shy about letting on to that.
Yeah.
So, I feel like he's winning that job right now. Where are you at, Santiago?
Last time we saw Kenyon Green play was preseason game against the Saints, right?
I'm not mistaken. He did play in the preseason last year, yes.
I got to see him out there.
Yeah, I got to see him out
there. I mean, everybody's been raving about how he looks good, how he looks he's slimmer, you know, all that stuff. I got to see him out there.
Yeah.
I got to see him with pads on against the Bears.
Mm-hmm.
Just let's see if everything everybody's been hyping about, let's see if it's true.
This is the one where I'm most conflicted,
mm-hmm.
honestly, because I think he needs to be out there. Like, I just flat out forget what I want to see. I think he needs to be out there. I just flat out think he needs to play.
Mm-hmm.
But my boy be getting injured.
Yeah.
Like, my boy, the whole reason why we're here, I understand he underperformed as a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
But he came into the league injured.
Yeah.
Stayed injured all year as a rookie. We didn't talk a lot about it because he's out there getting worked, and we were just talking about what we were seeing on the field.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't never right.
Yeah,
Kenyon Green ain't been right yet.
Yeah,
until now.
Mm-hmm.
Until now. So, yeah, I want to see him play. I think just straight up forget what we want. I think he needs to be out there and should play. But I get protecting dude a little bit. He be injured, man.
He be injured.
Dude be injured. So I'm just, I feel uncomfortable talking about putting an offensive lineman in bubble wrap, so I don't want to say that. But I don't want dude to get injured. Mm-hmm. I don't want dude to get, especially at the damn Hall of Fame game. So, yeah, he should get some preseason snaps. He should play more than his counterpart on the right side. Like, he needs to play way more than Shaq Mason does in this, you know, in this preseason. But tonight, I'd be okay if they didn't want their left guard, who they didn't play last year because he be injured all the time, if they didn't want to subject him to possible injury. Last one here. One more name. Kamari Lassiter. A starter who has not played any NFL football. Would you play him tonight?
I would. This is my, the one I'm most conflicted on.
Okay.
I know that that kid wants to be on the field. He's still a rookie. He's going to be a starter. I think he's looking pretty damn good. I mean, we can't get ahead of ourselves too much, but he's looking pretty damn good. That said, this is one where, and this is kind of a cop-out, I know. If I were D'Amico or Matt Burke or whomever, I'd sit with him and say, do you want to play? Because he's been chomping at the bit to get on in a real game. They've been doing all these things.
What if he says no?
If he says no, then don't play him. Like, because, yeah.
I mean, yeah, don't play him, I guess. If he says no, absolutely don't play him.
Yeah.
But does that not change your opinion about him a little bit?
He's not going to say no. He's not going to say no. He deserves at least one series. I've seen enough at camp. There are going to be other preseason games to find out more. But if he wants to get out there, his entire life has been built around getting in an NFL uniform in under the lights in a real game in front of real fans, I would give him a series.
About you, Santiago.
Yes, I want to see him out there. At the end of the day, he's a rookie. And I know it's just like, oh, well, rookie. This rookie. You want to see him out there. And as I said earlier, the jitters, man. Those jitters. You want to get him out early. And why not do it today?
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to see him. I get that he's a starter, you know, listed at the top of the depth chart. I want to see him. Mm-hmm. I want to see all the rookies. Every rookie. I don't care where they fall on the depth chart. I don't care how many times we've mentioned their name or not mentioned their name on this show. I actually want to see every single rookie, specifically the drafted ones. Mm-hmm. And then there are a couple of undrafted ones. We talked about British Brooks. There are some others. But I want to see every member of the 2024 Texans draft class out there tonight playing against the Chicago Bears in the Hall of Fame game. He's John Lopez, Chris Santiago holding things down for us. I am Brandon Scott here on In the Loop. Coming up next, let's circle back to the Astros. We play the hits here on Sports Radio 610.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for tonight's game and Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
We obviously have the Texans in the Hall of Fame game tonight. We got Andre Johnson going into the Hall of Fame, but we got more going on around here. So now we play the hits.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day.
You're listening to In the Loop
with Houston's sports leader,
Sports Radio 610.
Lopez, Santiago, gotta say the Astros had me a little bit worried last night. I was like, not again. Here we go again. They already lost three straight, two straight to this team. Don't tell me they're gonna get swept at home, coming off the heels of the trade deadline, which, as we have covered already, left a lot to be desired, even if it did bring back one all-star Kikuchi.
Mm-hmm.
But, or former all-star, I should say.
Yeah.
But not all was lost, and we know this too. Watching the Astros, you cannot count these dudes out. They will come back on your ass like nothing you've ever seen, man. This is just something that they do, man.
Yeah.
They got the bats to do it. Framber Valdez goes out there a little skittish,
mm-hmm.
but got that doobie hit. Got that doobie hit in the sixth inning.
Left or right?
Hey, man. You know what's funny? Dude said after the game that he wasn't even trying to hit a home run.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But you couldn't tell by this.
Dubon drives one deep to left field. He set on that pitch and he gives the Astros the lead. 5-4 Astros. Doobie off the bench with a pinch hit. Huge home run.
And a no-doubter. Hey, no-doubter. Shout out to Doobie. But also, as I mentioned before, this was an example of Joe Espada pushing the right buttons, pressing the right buttons, pinches him for John Singleton, forces them to make the pitching change. Oh, by the way, their pitching change didn't work.
Yeah.
Doobie hit. Photo win. Love it.
Just squared up, Dubon. This was a really kind of a weird game.
Very weird game. You know, Very weird game.
For me, anyway.
Should point out, too, by the way, the Pirates had four errors.
Yeah, that too.
Four. The Astros themselves had two, and they have had. It has been a comedy of errors in this series.
They
the Astros
really
have not been great.
Game the other day.
Sloppy, 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 sloppy. But if you're counting, that's six between the two teams.
Yeah. So kind of weird because if you came in and you're watching Fromber, you know, kind of started mowing him down there. Oh, after he gave up a four run, I believe second inning.
Yeah,
and so. Like, that was Fromber in a nutshell. Like, that's his career, basically. Man, he's really good. Well, wait, no, he's not. I mean, that was that. But it's an all's well that ends well kind of win for them. And you're right. You know, Joe Espada stayed true to how he manages these games. Pinch hitting for Singleton. They go lefty-righty. Dubon stays in and squares it up.
If I were a Pirates fan, or if I'm the Pirates looking at this, so this is just to kind of look at it from the opposite lens.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this for a second. You had the same amount of errors as the Astros did hits. I'm looking at this right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Pirates had four errors last night. The Astros had four hits. That'll lose you the game.
Man.
When you out-hit a team, double up a team in hitting. They had the same number of errors that they did runs. Like, it's like, dude.
Very weird.
How bad? But, yeah. Shout out to the Astros. Shout out to the Doobie hit. And Joe Espada pressing the right buttons. Also, Astros related. That wasn't the only. I wouldn't even say that was the biggest news of the day. To me, what happened outside the lines was the biggest Astros headline of the day. And that was them DFAing, as Lopez mentioned earlier in the show, a kind way of saying let go, wave, cut, sayonara, bye. Told Rafael Montero to hit the road, Jack.
Yeah.
Now, you can come back if you want to play in AAA, but that's up to you. Figure it out. But Rafael Montero, no longer on the big league squad, despite signing that lucrative three-year deal just two off seasons ago. That paid him $11.5 million a year.
Now, here's where it gets interesting, because it's very much in play that Jim Crane pretty much shrugs and still uses Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson and other players as his biggest confidants, his biggest advisors, whatever you want to call it. All I know is money talks to Jim Crane as much as anybody, and lost a lot of money with Jose Abreu. Lost a lot of money again with Rafael Montero. I couldn't trust those guys. Like, those were the guys that came under Jeff Bagwell's, you know, interim, whatever you want to call it, unofficially general manager, and they were abject failures.
No way around it.
Abject failures.
No way around it. Absolutely not. Now, Dana Brown did talk about potentially bringing Montero back to maybe do a little AAA work for him, get right, as they say. And this is what that sounded like.
Hope and vision that he would accept the assignment and go to AAA and try to regain the status that he had, you know, in 2022. You know, Montero's been really good for this organization. He's got a lot of family in this clubhouse and friends, and a big part of it is that we hope that he goes down to AAA and kind of finds himself and get back to that status of being really good. So, and with that said, I'll take any questions you guys may have.
Just to clarify, has he accepted the assignment to AAA?
No, I mean, he said he was going to talk to his wife and he's going to talk to his agent, but he was very open and optimistic, and the conversation was great. And he, you know, he talked about how much fun and how much family he feel like he has here, and so we feel optimistic that he's probably going to accept it.
I mean, maybe, but I would be shocked. I would be shocked. Yeah, go on down to AAA. We'll see if we can get you back up here. You're still getting your money, but we'll see if we can get you back up here.
Man, I would have a vacation booked so fast. He say, who are you going to talk to, his wife and his agent?
Yeah.
Listen, man, first of all, me and my agent popping bottles. Can you believe we pulled this here off?
Yeah.
Man, best agent ever, best negotiation ever. Like, I got overpaid something serious on the other side of 30 at that. That's right. Like, how did this happen? Oh, we found a mark. We just happened to be coming off of a team or off of a season.
Well, you calling him a mark. That's a good way to put it.
They found them a mark. The Astros in that moment,
yeah,
coming off of a World Series.
I hadn't even thought of it in those terms.
Dude, they're coming off of a World Series,
yeah,
but they got the hubris,
yeah,
of...
And it was like 6 days after, wasn't it?
I was there, man. They were like, yeah, before they signed it. We were there for, maybe it was them announcing that James Click wasn't coming back, whatever it was. It was like, Montero's a priority.
Yeah.
And we all looked around at each other like, is he though? Why? Is that right? Like, and he was good that year, but it was like, he's a priority? Like, you can't find another one of those guys. The place that manufactures pitchers, yeah, that basically builds guys like that.
But the mark part, I wish I'd have thought of that, because they also saw Jeff Bagwell.
That's what I'm saying.
And Crane and Reggie Jackson said, and the agent's like rubbing his hands together going, hey, we got a deal for you.
This is the mark of it, Lopez.
Yeah.
We just came off of a World Series run. Montero just pitched.
Everything is great.
For a World Series team where now ain't nobody in charge.
Mm-hmm.
They feeling good about themselves. Yeah, they probably want to throw around
some
money.
Substitute teacher, man.
Yes.
This is a substitute teacher.
Man, I don't know who Montero's agent is, but you know they got to be celebrating. And his wife.
Yeah.
Hey, man. She can't leave him. She can't leave him because you want to talk about going out there and getting overpaid. He absolutely did that and held it down for the family. Also in the hits. CJ Stroud, and we talked about this throughout the offseason, but it is worth noting as they play the Bears and as we gear up for the NFL season now, the closer we get to it. He has made the rookie expectations sky high, even what you might call unreasonable for the new quarterbacks in the NFL 100%.
Boy, you bring up CJ Stroud. There were six quarterbacks taken in the first round this year.
Yep.
Caleb Williams at the top of the list, number one overall. Whether they like it or not, every quarterback now entering the league is going to be measured up against C.J. Stroud because of how he played last year, better than any other quarterback rookie ever had. And now all these guys, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, if and when he gets called upon, any of these guys are going to be measured against a guy who set the standard last year. He elevated the bar for rookie quarterbacks. Right. Expectations for first-round draft picks at rookie quarterback already are high. He made them higher. And when they struggle, and inevitably some of these guys will struggle, it's going to make it all the more challenging because of the success that C.J. Stroud had last year.
That is Adam Schefter on Get Up, and truer words have never been spoken. It's unfair. But that's how good he was. Like, what is Caleb Williams going to be? What's an acceptable season for him from Bears fans?
No, it is unfair, but it is also real.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like C.J. Stroud is the bar for him because he is going into, and maybe it was overplayed on what kind of situation C.J. Stroud was going into because we really didn't know as much about it. DeMeco being a first-year head coach, Bobby Slowick being a first-year offensive coordinator. There was a lot of uncertainty on the situation C.J. Stroud was going into and maybe too much of let's just assign the previous narrative to this franchise and assume that that's the way it is. With Caleb Williams, he's going into a 7-win football team that has leveled up and has given him, in my view, every chance and case to do something similar to what C.J. Stroud did. So the pressure is on, buddy, him specifically. But as far as rookie quarterbacks go, I find it just great for C.J. How about the glow up for C.J. Stroud to go from second fiddle to Bryce Young to now the standard for what rookie quarterbacks are supposed to look like.
And doing it this year, right after C.J. Stroud. It's almost unfair. I get it. It's cool for us. But it's like that old, what's that old showbiz saying? Never follow a dog act. You can't win. Well, never follow C.J. Stroud. You can't win.
Good luck.
Not only that, but I mean, Caleb Williams, the hype around him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be tough for him, too.
This is a good point, Santiago, because he was going to have a lot of pressure no matter what because of the hype around him.
Now?
So take C.J. Stroud out of the equation. there was going to be a lot of pressure on Caleb Williams. Then you add C.J. Stroud's season to it last year, and all of it is context.
He's no C.J. Stroud. He's good, but he's no C.J. Stroud. Okay.
Fascinating. I cannot wait. Can you learn anything from a preseason game? What will we learn from tonight? That's next here on In the Loop.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're on the road to Canton, getting you ready for tonight's game and Andre Johnson's Hall of Fame induction on Saturday. Here's In the Loop.
We obviously have the Texans in the Hall of Fame game tonight. We got Andre Johnson going into the Hall of Fame, but we got more going on around here. So now we play the hits.
Playing all the hits. These are the hot stories of the day. You're listening to In the Loop with Houston's sports leader, Sports Radio 610.
Lopez, Santiago. Gotta say the Astros had me a little bit worried last night. I was like, not again. Here we go again. They already lost three straight, two straight to this team. Don't tell me they're going to get swept at home, coming off the heels of the trade deadline, which, as we have covered already, left a lot to be desired, even if it did bring back one all-star Kikuchi.
Mm-hmm.
But, or former all-star, I should say.
Yeah.
But not all was lost, and we know this too. Watching the Astros, you cannot count these dudes out. They will come back on your ass like nothing you've ever seen, man. This is just something that they do, man.
Yeah.
They got the bats to do it. Framber Valdez goes out there a little skittish, but got that doobie hit. Got that doobie hit in the sixth inning.
Left or right?
Hey, man. You know what's funny? Dude said after the game that he wasn't even trying to hit a home run.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
But you couldn't tell by this.
Dubon drives one deep to left field. He set on that pitch, and he gives the Astros the lead. 5-4 Astros. Doobie off the bench with a pinch hit. Huge home run.
And a no-doubter. Hey, no-doubter. Shout out to Doobie. But also, as I mentioned before, this was an example of Joe Espada pushing the right buttons, pressing the right buttons. Pinch hits him for John Singleton. Forces them to make the pitching change. Oh, by the way, their pitching change didn't work.
Yeah.
Doobie hit. Photo win. Love it.
Just squared up, Dubon. This was a really kind of a weird game.
Very weird game. You know, weird game.
For me, anyway.
Should point out, too, by the way, the Pirates had four errors.
Yeah, that too.
Four. The Astros themselves had two, and they have had. It has been a comedy of errors in this series.
Man, the
Astros
really
have not been great.
Game the other day.
Sloppy. But if you're counting, that's six between the two teams.
Yeah. So kind of weird because if you came in and you're watching Framber, you know, kind of started mowing him down there. Oh, after he gave up a four run, I believe second inning.
Yeah,
and so. Like, that was Framber in a nutshell. Like, that's his career, basically. Man, he's really good. Well, wait, no, he's not. I mean, that was that. But it's an all's well that ends well kind of win for them. And you're right. You know, Joe Espada stayed true to how he manages these games. Pinch hitting for Singleton. They go lefty-righty. Dubon stays in and squares it up.
If I were a Pirates fan, or if I'm the Pirates looking at this, so this is just to kind of look at it from the opposite lens.
Mm-hmm.
Think about this for a second. You had the same amount of errors as the Astros did hits. I'm looking at this right now.
Mm-hmm.
The Pirates had four errors last night. The Astros had four hits. That'll lose you the game.
Man.
When you out-hit a team, double up a team in hitting. They had the same number of errors that they did runs. Like, it's like, dude.
Very weird.
How bad. But, yeah. Shout out to the Astros. Shout out to the Doobie hit and Joe Espada pressing the right buttons. Also, Astros related. That wasn't the only. I wouldn't even say that that was the biggest news of the day. To me, what happened outside the lines was the biggest Astros headline of the day. And that was them DFAing, as Lopez mentioned earlier in the show, a kind way of saying let go, wave, cut, sayonara, bye. Told Rafael Montero to hit the road, Jack.
Yeah.
Now, you can come back if you want to play in AAA, but that's up to you. Figure it out. But Rafael Montero, no longer on the big league squad, despite signing that lucrative three-year deal just two off seasons ago that paid him $11.5 million a year.
Now, here's where it gets interesting, because it's very much in play that Jim Crane pretty much shrugs and still uses Jeff Bagwell and Reggie Jackson and other players as his biggest confidants, his biggest advisors, whatever you want to call it. All I know is money talks to Jim Crane as much as anybody, and lost a lot of money with Jose Abreu. Lost a lot of money again with Rafael Montero. I couldn't trust those guys. Like those were the guys that came under Jeff Bagwell's, you know, interim, whatever you want to call it, unofficially general manager, and they were abject failures.
No way around it.
Abject failures.
No way around it. Absolutely not. Now, Dana Brown did talk about potentially bringing Montero back to maybe do a little AAA work for him, get right, as they say. And this is what that sounded like.
Hope and vision that he would accept the assignment and go to AAA and try to regain the status that he had, you know, in 2022. You know, Montero's been really good for this organization. He's got a lot of family in this clubhouse and friends, and a big part of it is that we hope that he goes down to AAA and kind of refines himself and get back to that status of being really good. So, and with that said, I'll take any questions you guys may have.
Just to clarify, has he accepted the assignment to AAA?
No, I mean, he said he was going to talk to his wife and he's going to talk to his agent, but he was very open and optimistic, and the conversation was great. And he, you know, he talked about how much fun and how much family he feel like he has here. And so we feel optimistic that he's probably going to accept it.
I mean, maybe, but I would be shocked. I would be shocked. Yeah, go on down to AAA. We'll see if we can get you back up here. You're still getting your money, but we'll see if we can get you back up here.
Man, I would have a vacation booked so fast. He say, who are you going to talk to, his wife and his agent?
Yeah.
Listen, man, first of all, me and my agent popping bottles. Can you believe we pulled this here off?
Yeah.
Man, best agent ever, best negotiation ever. Like, I got overpaid something serious. On the other side of 30 at that.
Right.
Like, how did this happen? Oh, we found a mark. We just happened to be coming off of a team or off of a season.
Well, you calling him a mark. That's a good way to put it.
They
found them a mark.
The Astros in that moment?
Yeah.
Coming off of a World Series.
I hadn't even thought of it in those terms.
Dude, they're coming off of a World Series.
Yeah.
But they got the hubris.
Yeah.
Of.
And it was like 6 days after, wasn't it?
I was there, man. They were like, yeah, before they signed it, we were there for, maybe it was them announcing that James Click wasn't coming back, whatever it was. It was like, Montero's a priority.
Yeah.
And we all looked around at each other like, is he though? Why? Is that right? Like, and he was good that year, but it was like, he's a priority? Like, you can't find another one of those guys. The place that manufactures pitchers?
Yeah.
That basically builds guys like that.
But the mark part, I wish I'd have thought of that, because they also saw Jeff Bagwell.
That's what I'm saying.
And Crane and Reggie Jackson said, and the agent's like rubbing his hands together going, hey, we got a deal for you.
This is the mark of it, Lopez.
Yeah.
We just came off of a World Series run. Montero just pitched.
Everything is great.
For a World Series team where now ain't nobody in charge.
Mm-hmm.
They feeling good about themselves. Yeah, they probably want to throw around
some
money.
Substitute teacher, man.
Yes.
This is a substitute teacher.
Man, I don't know who Montero's agent is, but you know they got to be celebrating. And his wife.
Yeah.
Hey, man. She can't leave him. She can't leave him because you want to talk about going out there and getting overpaid. He absolutely did that and held it down for the family. Also in the hits, CJ Stroud. And we talked about this throughout the offseason. But it is worth noting as they play the Bears and as we gear up for the NFL season now, the closer we get to it. He has made the rookie expectations sky high, even what you might call unreasonable for the new quarterbacks in the NFL, 100%.
Or you bring up C.J. Stroud. There were six quarterbacks taken in the first round this year.
Yep.
Caleb Williams at the top of the list, number one overall. Whether they like it or not, every quarterback now entering the league is going to be measured up against C.J. Stroud because of how he played last year, better than any other quarterback rookie ever had. And now all these guys, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May, if and when he gets called upon, any of these guys are going to be measured against a guy who set the standard last year. He elevated the bar for rookie quarterbacks. Right. Expectations for first-round draft picks at rookie quarterback already are high. He made them higher, and when they struggle, and inevitably some of these guys will struggle, it's going to make it all the more challenging because of the success that C.J. Stroud had last year.
That is Adam Schefter on Get Up, and truer words have never been spoken. It's unfair, but that's how good he was. Like, what is Caleb Williams going to be? What's an acceptable season for him from Bears fans?
No, it is unfair, but it is also real.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, like C.J. Stroud is the bar for him because he is going into, and maybe it was overplayed on what kind of situation C.J. Stroud was going into because we really didn't know as much about it. DeMeco being a first-year head coach, Bobby Slowick being a first-year offensive coordinator. There was a lot of uncertainty on the situation C.J. Stroud was going into and maybe too much of let's just assign the previous narrative to this franchise and assume that that's the way it is. With Caleb Williams, he's going into a 7-win football team that has leveled up and has given him, in my view, every chance and case to do something similar to what C.J. Stroud did. So the pressure is on, buddy, him specifically. But as far as rookie quarterbacks go, I find it just great for C.J. How about the glow up for C.J. Stroud to go from second fiddle to Bryce Young to now the standard for what rookie quarterbacks are supposed to look like.
And doing it this year, right after C.J. Stroud. It's almost unfair. I get it. It's cool for us. But it's like that old, what's that old showbiz saying? Never follow a dog act. You can't win. Well, never follow C.J. Stroud. You can't win.
Good luck.
Not only like that, but, I mean, Caleb Williams, the hype around him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be tough for him, too.
This is a good point, Santiago, because he was going to have a lot of pressure no matter what because of the hype around him.
Now?
So take C.J. Stroud out of the equation. There was going to be a lot of pressure on Caleb Williams. Then you add C.J. Stroud's season to it last year and all of it is context.
He's no C.J. Stroud. He's good, but he's no C.J. Stroud. Okay.
Fascinating. I cannot wait. Can you learn anything from a preseason game? What will we learn from tonight? That's next here on In the Loop.
What's better than watching your team win? Winning money while you do it. I'm Jim Costa, and on Cash the Ticket, Mike Valeni and I give you the edge to make every game playable. College football, NFL, we're breaking it all down game by game. Your podcast feed is going to be filled, and you're going to love it. You can click on the games you care about. We do it all. With our analysis, we're finding games that other people aren't talking about. We're turning every Saturday and every Sunday into days where you got a chance to win. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Cash the Ticket with us. Follow Cash the Ticket in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.